Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest apparent use of chemical weapons in Syria that has both the French government and Senator John McCain calling for the use of force against the Assad regime. Raymond Zelinskas, a former UN chemical and biological weapons inspector in Iraq who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute of International Studies, joins us to discuss the evidence so far that might indicate Assad has crossed President Obama's red line. Then we'll look into why the Egyptian military decided to release the former dictator Hosni Mubarak from jail at a time when they are claiming that their month-long imposition of martial law and the bloody crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood is not a coup and that they want to return to democracy and civilian rule in Egypt. Egyptian journalist Imad McKay, a senior fellow at the investigative reporting program at the University of California, Berkeley, who writes for Al Jazeera and Interpress Service, joins us to discuss whether the army is restoring the old order. Then finally, we'll assess the president's proposed college rating system that he is rolling out on his bus tour of the Northeast to promote lowering the cost of college. Former Assistant Secretary of Education Diane Ravitch, the author of The Death and Life of the Great American School System and a new book, Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to Public Schools, joins us to discuss how he could claim to want to lower college costs while not dealing with the taxpayer-funded for-profit college racket that is saddling students with worthless diplomas and mountains of debt. And joining us now is Raymond Zelinskas, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. He's a senior investigator at the Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Center component of the Center for Nonproliferation Studies, which is working in partnership with the Center for Infectious Diseases and Emergency Readiness at the School of Public Health at the University of California in Berkeley. He's a former United Nations Special Commission Biological and Chemical Weapons Inspector in Iraq, and is the author of Biological Warfare, Modern Offense and Defense, and his latest book is The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. Welcome to Background Briefing, Raymond Zelinskas.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah.
And hundreds of Syrians have died in this recent attack on Ghouta, which is a rebel-held area in the Damascus suburbs, right in the capital of Syria. And the death toll is likely to rise. My understanding that Secretary of State Kerry has been on the phone all day with foreign ministers and other foreign leaders, and there have been lots of meetings in the National Security Council today. So it may not be an entire surprise that we find in the next couple of days that we're bombing Syria. But at this point, what is the status of the evidence?
Well, there's two parts to trying to figure out what's happening when there's an suspected chemical event. First one is, was there actually a chemical weapons agent used to harm and kill people? And the second one is that if it is found that, yes, there was a chemical agent used, then you have to try to figure out what they call attribution. In other words, who used the agent?
So where do we stand on that? I mean, recently the Assad regime, who had been stalling for the longest time, allowed in a UN team led by the Swedish scientist Åke Sällström, but they only restricted them to three sites, my understanding is.
Well, the restrictions were put on them before this recent event happened. So as I understand it, at this time, several governments and the United Nations Security Council and Secretary General are all trying to get the Assad government to agree to extending the scope of the team to include this recent event in Damascus.
And the casualties are up to 1,800 people so far. What's your understanding from just of the pictures we've seen of these casualties? Do they look to you like, because the bodies don't seem to be people that have survived, that were killed in a bombing or a shelling or an artillery, barrage or whatever. The casualties that we've been seeing so far in this extremely bloody civil war, they were pretty much intact from what I could tell.
Yes, that's right. It is a rather mysterious situation as far as trying to figure out what happened, because as you said, the photographs and the videos that I have seen, they indicate that, first of all, there are a lot of people have been hurt. There's no question about that. And most of them, from the visual evidence, is the most of them do not show trauma. So they look like they have been, well, maybe by overpressure, in other words, by the side effects of a very large explosion, they get such pressure that can kill people. And the other second would be some sort of chemical. But there's kind of contradictory evidence. There's, on one hand, yes, there are no trauma, and these people have, many of the victims show symptoms that can become from being exposed to especially nerve agents. But on the other hand, you're getting, for example, one of the symptoms that is very typical of a nerve agent is meiosis. In other words, pinprick pupils. Well, the descriptions we're getting from doctors at the ground, they're saying that the pupils are dilated, which is quite, the opposite. On the other hand, the doctors are reporting foaming at the mouth, a lot of secretions, saliva, and so on, which are symptoms of a nerve agent contamination. So there's a lot of it's a lot of mystery still.
And what's happening in terms of the first responders? Because from a chemical weapons attack, first responders are vulnerable because the sarin, for example, is, if it's on the clothes, you touch that and you're dead.
That's right. And that's something that I see that's on these photos and videos that's very curious, and that is that you would think that if somebody is exposed to a deadly agent, nerve agent, mustard agent, whatever, the first thing that first responders would do is to undress them, get rid of their outer clothing, because that's very likely to be contaminated by the causative agent. And you do that because you want to protect the first responders and the people, the doctors and nurses that treat these people. But a lot of these photos show people that look like they're fully dressed in their usual street clothing, and they are being attended to by people who don't have masks, don't have any kind of personal protection gear, and don't have gloves. And I find that very curious.
Again, I'm speaking with Raymond Zielinskas, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Non-Proliferation Program at the Monterey Institute of International Studies, and he was a former chemical and biological weapons inspector, UN weapons inspector in Iraq, and is the author of The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. So, as I was mentioning earlier, Ray, there have been meetings all day at the National Security Council. The president's apparently ordered the intelligence community to urgently gather information. He's getting the French saying that we should use force. John McCain, of course, as usual, is calling for the use of force. The Turkish foreign minister has said that all these red lines have been crossed and that the United Nations, particularly the Security Council, have been absolutely useless so far. That is certainly the case. What's your sense? I mean, I know you're a specialist on chemical and biological weapons and not necessarily on national security politics and policies, but it looks as though, given the enormous number of casualties, that some kind of weapon was used here, and this could be the red line, surely.
Well, you can't can't get away from the possibility that a toxic agent was released from a facility, such as a factory, that had either them toxic agents that were stored or they were producing them. And one of the most vivid examples, or the most vivid example, was the Bhopal disaster in December 1982, when the Union Carbide pesticide factory released a large quantity of a chemical called methyl isocyanate, which was carried in by the wind into the city of Bhopal and immediately killed 3,000 people. So when I look at the video of the explosion that apparently was caused by rockets, at least that's what the insurgents are claiming, you see this huge cloud or this huge smoke coming up from somewhere farther away. You can't really see the facility, but it's going into the atmosphere. Now, if you had a chemical agent, that would be designed to creep along the ground, to be heavier than air. So, again, you have this kind of mystery. Is one of these facilities some sort of factory that has been destroyed and is now burning and giving off toxic smoke that can affect people? Or do you have also the fact or the possibility that rockets carrying chemical weapons started the fire, and the chemical weapons are also affecting people? And maybe that's also why you get the mysterious symptoms that seem to contradict one another. It's, like I said, it's really, really a very odd, very difficult situation to evaluate.
But it seems extraordinary that this is happening right in Damascus itself, and that these casualties, if you see these pictures, there's so many women and children involved. I mean, I suppose that just indicates how disgraceful this civil war has been and how brutal Assad has been in allowing it to get to this point. And he apparently is absolutely rigid and dug in, and the Russians and the Iranians and Hezbollah seem to be equally committed to victory at all cost or at any cost. So I don't know. I mean, this I just have this suspicion that this might be a game changer if this could be proven to have any connection to chemical weapons. I mean, they've said in the last time around that the rebels had them, and I looked into that, and it seemed highly unlikely. I don't know where they get them from. Although there were some reports that maybe some were loose in Libya. Do you have any evidence that there could any way in the world that the rebels could have any use of or access to chemical weapons?
Well, not. They might have captured some chemical weapons, but the more likely scenario is that they have toxic agents such as pesticides, which can be almost as bad as nerve agents. They're essentially made of the same basic chemicals of phosphorus. They could get this phosphine gas, for example, which is used for fumigation purposes by farms and by builders. So it's a possibility that they could, you know, have not exactly sophisticated chemical weapons, which you would assume the Assad government has, but they have access to toxic chemicals and could use them. And that's the reason why it's so important to get the inspectors in there. You have this group of 20 people of highly trained, really very, very expert persons with chemical weapons standing not many miles away from the site of where this chemical event happened. So the best thing that can happen for the whole world is that if the Assad government allowed these inspectors to go to the site and figure out what actually occurred.
Well, apparently after this event or whatever caused it, the Assad regime shelled and obliterated the area. So I'm not sure what kind of condition the evidence is in.
Right, but there are victims.
Sure.
And victims, you can still get samples from the victims. You get blood samples and get urine samples. And that will give you a very good indication. Not only will the original chemical be excreted, but also its metabolic byproducts. So, yes, they can do a lot of Yes.
Well, let's not get too grisly, and I thank you for joining us, Ray Zelenskis.
Thank you, Ian, for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Raymond Zelenskis, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Mater Institute of International Studies. He's a senior investigator at the Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Center, component of the Center for Nonproliferation Studies, which is working in partnership with the Center for Infectious Diseases and Emergency Readiness at the School of Public Health at the University of California at Berkeley. He's a former United Nations Special Commission Biological and Chemical Weapons Inspector in Iraq and is the author of The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the extent to which the release of Mubarak indicates a return of the old guard in Egypt.
I'd be